Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. It is now time for Inside Matters, Spiritual Talk, Healing Done Right, Spiritual Growth, 12-Step Indigo Meditation, and much
more. Am I having a rough day today? Well, I'm glad, or hopefully I'm glad, that I corrected an error, because I posted our show for yesterday instead of today, and when I came into the studio and started setting up to play the show or to get started, guess what? It said that we did the show yesterday, and I know we didn't do the show yesterday because I wasn't here yesterday. Oh my goodness. Well, I'm glad for Bio. I called her and she said she's here. She's going to be talking with us. And I just hope everyone just made a mistake and didn't even look at what I posted and came in today, the usual time that they know we're going to be here. I'm trying to pack months before a move, so my house is, or my apartment is in a bunch of chaos. People want to drop boxes off at me. They just want to put them everywhere, so now I'm stepping over boxes. I'm having problems with my back, and my chiropractor wants me to go to a surgeon, and then my primary care physician, because I'm in so much pain, she wants to send me to a rheumatologist for rheumatoid arthritis. And so I'm just like going a little bit batty here. So I have to say, I forgive myself. I don't blame myself for posting the show yesterday instead of today. I got my days all mixed up. But here we are. I'm going to put a bio on. I'm not going to talk too much because y'all don't need to hear from me anyway. Y'all need to hear your topic for today. And so I'm going to put on without delay and say, hey, bio.
Hello, hello.
I'm going crazy.
I feel you. Mm-hmm. It must be the moon, the planets, the stars.
Well, I'm not getting enough sleep because I can't lay on my, because of my back, I can't lay on my stomach. I can't lay on my back. I can't lay on either side. So I have to sit in some kind of funky, you know, sit-up position on the couch. And it's like, and I wake up to go to the restroom, and then everything just hurts. You know, then I try to find a comfortable position to go back to sleep. It's just crazy. But I'm okay. You know, I'm grateful. I'm breathing. You know, I'm alive, and I'm shuffling boxes around over there, and what can I say? You know, I'm not moving anywhere yet, so I'm just packing to make sure the universe knows I'm serious. I want to get out of here.
Right. So your move is supposed to happen the first?
No. I don't know when my move is going to happen.
Okay.
Move is going to happen when my creator.
When your move happens.
Absolutely. But guess what? I'm going to be ready for it. Because my stuff is packing up.
Right.
You know?
Good.
So that's the way I do life. When I want the universe to unfold and give me those things that I believe I desire, I start preparing to receive them.
I say that's the way to do it. Mm-hmm. Receive it. Claim it and receive it.
Absolutely.
That's what my sister said. Claim it and receive it.
Claim it and receive it. So the applications are flying, and I'm just waiting for somebody to say, hey, we want you. We've been waiting for you. I'm saying I'm ready to go.
I know that.
So come on with this colorism paradox thingy got going on here.
Well, you know, all of my conversations or my topics kind of start as these communications or conversations that I'm having with people around me, right? And then I draw on these experiences, and I'm like, you know what? Why don't we talk more about those things, you know? And how come we haven't spent time really exploring them and kind of doing some of the work that we need to do around them? So for me, you know, I guess we should kind of start with a definition of what colorism is, and then talk a little bit about what the paradox is in relationship to that, and then kind of talk about these experiences or these memories that I have or conversations that I've had that have kind of informed the topic today. And then I'm going to kind of do a little history thing and then go back to those experiences to further explore what it is I mean and do a little deeper dive, you know.
Okay.
So first, colorism basically is discrimination based on your skin color. And it's about, it has to do with where people are of the same, I'm going to use this word for lack of a better term, ethnicity, because race is a constructed, you know, situation, are treated differently based on the color of their skin. Right?
Mm-hmm.
We know that happens all the time. Dark-skinned people have a harder time getting positions, more, you know, more professionally driven positions. Dark-skinned people have a more difficult time, they say, excuse me, being accepted and valued in relationship, you know, as opposed to lighter-skinned persons. And, you know, they're not seen visually. They tend to have jobs that are like in the back office versus the front office and so on and so forth. They make different amounts of money in relationship to their lighter skin counterparts and so on and so forth. But we know those things happen. We know those things occur. But the paradox around that has to do with the disparity that everyone experiences based on their skin tone. And it's more so a political attitude around the belief that all Black people's fates are linked by who we are as a people and not just by the skin color, right?
Mm-hmm.
So an example of that would be the fact that we recognize that dark-skinned people may have a harder time than light-skinned people. That's the colorism aspect. But the paradox is that we recognize that all African-American or Black people experience political repercussions around who they are as Black people, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in trying to reconcile those things, I think our communities have some work to do around how we treat each other, you know. And that brings me to some of the experiences or conversations that kind of drove my thoughts around this piece this month. One of them was when I was about, happened to me when I was about, 9 years old, around 9 or 10 years old.
Okay.
I was much more fair than I am now. I didn't really start darkening to the kind of honey color that I have now until I was around 16, but I was a lot more fair then. And I remember I had a little friend, and we're actually still friends to this day, who took me home to meet her mother. And apparently she had been telling her mother about me for a while. And when we went home, her mother said, "What? Wow, you didn't tell me she was light-skinned, you know. You said, because my friend's darker hued." And the mother says, "Well, you told me you didn't like light-skinned girls because they were uppity and they thought they were better than you." And so my friend responded, "Oh, no, Mommy, you know, she's different. She's not like them." Right. And I thought to myself, this is an interesting thing. You know, as even as a child, I heard that, and I was a little put off by it, right? Because this assumption of who it is that I was in terms of how I would relate to another African-American person was based on my skin tone, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it was really unusual for me because I was brought up as a black Muslim. And when, in that experience, we were all black people, right? It didn't matter what our skin tone was or whatever. We were all, the work was building a black nation, right? So, you know, this thing about who's light skin and who's dark skin, you know, wasn't really in our consciousness the same way. But I believe later, what I really didn't understand was that it wasn't in my consciousness necessarily, because some of my darker hued siblings would express their rage in regards to, or their dissatisfaction around being dark-skinned and their jealousy around me being free. I was the fairest, as my mother would say. You were the fairest child that I had, right? And I thought this was particularly interesting because my father was a blue-black man and my mother was a honey-colored woman, and I would walk down the street between the two of them. And people would look like I was looking at me like I was the mailman's child. You know what I mean? But in the other two situations that have happened to me around this occurred one about 10 years ago when a biracial woman was explaining to me that she was marrying someone who was Jewish. And this young man's grandmother came and talked to her and said, listen, I want you to convert to being Jewish so that we can have Jewish grandchildren because, you know, the line, the traditional line of being Jewish flows with the mother. It's a matrilineal line where it's the mother is Jewish and the children are Jewish, right? Doesn't matter if the father is Jewish. If the father is Jewish, so what? You know what I mean? The children are Jewish. And so the grandmother stated as her argument to this young woman, that they had survived the Holocaust only to face their annihilation this way. And that kind of stuck with me. So we're going to come back and revisit that in a while, right? And I thought, wow, okay. So she went on and she converted. She said she didn't have a big deal about it because it didn't mean much to her, but it meant much to the grandmother and that she would be able to have Jewish children. So anyway, the third thing that happened was more recent, about, I would say, 6 months or 7 months ago. We discovered that my partner's best friend was not a woman of color, as we thought all this time, but actually a European-American woman, right? So I come home from work, and my partner's kind of sitting there in her space in shock, right? And I'm like, what's going on? And she's like, well, today my best friend explained to me that she is not a woman of color, that she is actually a European woman. I'm like, huh, what are you saying, right? Mm-hmm. The dissonance of it all was like crushing. It was just really crushing. I couldn't make my mind formulate or come to terms with what I was experiencing. And she said there was some conversation or something happened when they were younger that there was this misunderstanding that the best friend was a woman of color, and the best friend never corrected it. She just kind of went along with it. But at some point, she corrected it, but my partner didn't remember the correction, you know, and it only came up in as a passing thing, as the best friend was describing some work that she tried to do with African-American women, and the African-American women were like, we're not comfortable speaking to you because you're not African-American. And then my partner's like, what? What are you saying? Right? So for me, it was difficult because I, you know, there are just ways in which people of color operate with each other that we don't necessarily operate with people who aren't, right? And this woman, my partner is light bright, as she likes to refer to, almost white, in her look, so much so that it confuses a lot of people when they meet her. And so her friend was equally, you know, cued the same way. So I just, when they said she was a person of color, woman of color, I just accepted it, went on with it, did whatever it is I was doing. And so that has been at times a conversational point, right? Like about 2 weeks ago, my partner said to me, as we were sitting on the sofa, I'm really trying to reconcile this thing around my best friend, you know. She said, you know, the dissonance occasionally pops up because I love her as the person that I know. She's always been supportive. She's always been loving towards me. She's always been this really wonderful person. But the dissonance rears its head from time to time, and I don't know what to do with it. It's really disconcerting, and it really is throwing me off balance in some areas of my life because it's making me question, you know, how it is I view things, and it's making me question whether or not I see things correctly, my perceptions and my perspectives on things. And so I said to her, I said, well, now you know why a lot of Black people who pass end up dead. And she was like, what? And I said, yeah, I mean, because you know what kind of dissonance you're experiencing. Imagine what kind of dissonance a person who identifies themselves as white experiences when they find out that this person they've trusted, that they've loved, that they have allowed to enter into their world in ways that they don't allow people of color to enter into their world, is actually a person of color. I said, for you, your construct is kind of built differently. It's built in the reverse. But for white culture, they have all of these lies around who we are as people of color in place so stringently that to have them challenged becomes something that threatens the very fiber of how America is built. So now this person has come into your life and has proven that everything you have been taught to be correct about people of color and why they need to be kept in their place and all this other stuff is nothing but a great lie. The level of dissonance that you experience is, I would imagine, is so volcanic in its form that you have to kill the person, to kill the truth in order to reconcile the dissonance. And so she was like, whoa. Right? So we kind of spent some time exploring that for a little bit, and then came to some questions, you know, that I have been trying to reconcile since then. They're living in my head and they're walking around with me, and they are spinning, they're creating their own kind of gravitational pull and inertia in my psyche that I'm really trying to spend some time with working out.
So, I need to, I'm interrupting you because you know, I'm confused.
Okay.
Because in this day and age, at our age, why are some people walking around with this thing bubbling around in them and, you know, affecting? Why is this bothering your mate so much?
This day and age, we haven't reconciled these things. We've only agreed, like I said, to avert our eyes. We haven't reconciled these things because
for all the years that we've been in existence. We haven't reconciled from the time I was born. You know, why is it bothering you to this degree?
Because I am looking at the new resurgence of these color lines, the stratifications of these color lines that are becoming more and more fixed in our society in ways that, or they're bubbling forward and showing just how fixed they are. For her, for instance, she walks into a room, and fortunately, I don't have to live this reality, but she walks into a room, and people automatically assume that she's not a black woman.
Right.
And because of that, they automatically, black people and white people, automatically assume that she has privileges that she may or may not have. And they automatically assume that she cannot relate to what it means to be black people, to be a person of color. And that is a very interesting paradigm for me. Because when I see her, you know, there are things like she has had friends who identify themselves as white who have insisted that she not identify herself as a woman of color. They're like, why would you do that? Why don't you just become a white woman and get all of the benefits that would be afforded you for being a white woman?
Right? That's not their business.
Right. Well, but
But why would I allow somebody to interject that into my life? That's not their business.
Right, exactly. So she has cut these people out of her life. But the very notion that they would do it, and not only do white people do it, I have witnessed black people do it. And they say to her, you're not really a black person because you're not suffering the way we all are. And I say, see, this is why back in the day, when I was also a child that was lighter hued, people who met me would be like, you're not as militant as I thought you would be. Usually light-skinned people are very militant. And I was like, what? All of these things. But see, as I've gotten older, I understand why light-skinned people may be more militant than others, because they actually get to go behind the curtain and see. On a regular basis, they hear on a regular basis what people are actually thinking because other people are assuming what they are and what they may and may not be. You see what I mean? You know? And so Abati will enter a room and enter the room by herself and be embraced by white culture in a way that is very uncomfortable for her, because usually they begin to show just how white they are, right, in terms of the work that she does. And but will not be embraced when she enters the room with me. Mm-hmm. And then somehow feel they is it, it it's like a betrayal, like she should have identified she was a person of color right off the bat, so that they would have known to not say what they had in their hearts to say, You see what I'm saying? And people of color will say to her, the new generation here, say, you should not consider yourself a black person because you have privileges that we don't have. So that's why I am looking at this new kind of unceasing stratification of color that we seem to be re-embracing instead of blurring. Like in the 70s and the 60s, we were blurring those things, right? We were moving to a different kind of awareness and how we needed to be as a people. But it seems to be now here in the 20s, the teens of 2000s and the 20s of 2000 that we are re-embracing some of these things that don't serve us. And I have been having conversations with younger and younger people about why it is, what's the benefit of passing for them. And I'm like, wow. This brings me back to that point around the Jewish woman saying, we survived all of this, all of these things that try to stamp out our existence in order to now have to face that our annihilation may come as our children choose to deny who they are as people of color.
Okay, I got to interject here.
Go ahead.
Because my understanding is, okay, you know, your topic is trying, you know, people mixing and meshing into or passing for a particular race, you know, for them to infiltrate. Whereas my understanding of colorism is a lot defined within the race itself, you know, within family. I saw a show called Blackish, and they had the same topic of colorism because, you know, they talked about Rainbow, the mother who is, you know, half and half, and then like the brother is light skin, and it all came about with the daughter, the twin daughter, where she took a picture with her brother, a class picture, and you could hardly see her because they didn't adjust the light on her. And then the older brother said, well, you know, you're talking about they need to adjust the color and they need to do this within the school system. What about right here in the household, in this house?
Right.
Okay, the dark is against the light-skinned ones and all that.
Exactly.
But you see, the thing with me is, you know, we want to go outside of ourselves and define what other people should be doing outside, you know? And when we need to do it inside first. You know, so
exactly.
That I don't feel, just because I'm light-skinned, I don't feel bad because I'm light-skinned. I had a cousin that grew up, she had, and Kim is very white-looking, you know, and she got teased as a baby because she had a pointed nose, straight white hair, you know, her father was Hispanic. You know, but it was in her own family where that crap was going on. So how can you expect people outside of our immediate circle to treat us? And we're going to fix things when we got to fix it inside the home first, inside our own immediate race.
Hey, I'm not saying that that's not the point. I'm saying we first have to be aware of it. And that's why I'm talking about this in terms of what actually happens and how it is that we're under so many different angles of attack. Because colorism didn't start with, that wasn't something we had as a people. We had tribism. Yes. You're Zulu.
You're Zulu.
I'm Nigerian.
Because even in slave times, you know, the dark ones were in the field and we got even darker.
Right. But who did that?
Was in the house.
Who did that? We did not do that. That was not our history. our history was one of tribism, where you were Zulu, you were Nigerian, you were Ghanaian, you were Tanzanian, you were the Berber. We were tribal in how we existed. That the stratification of color began when we came over here, and the construct of the African American, that's a constructed thing. We are a constructed people. Nowhere in the rest of the world is there anything as such as an African American. Nowhere. I mean, you got Brazilian Americans. You got, right, exactly. What I'm saying is, you have.
And I'm not in America.
But what I'm saying is,
Yoruba folks were a lot darker than the Dahomeys. So I'm sure there was colorism. They just didn't have the term back then in Africa.
Look. When they was fighting, okay, let me give you an example now.
Can you go ahead and give me some examples?
Over in India, currently, in India, they are stratified in caste societies, and usually the castes are based on their color, right? All right? The lower the caste, the darker the people are. I had a friend whose father is Brahmin class. That's the highest class you can be. But he is a blue-black man. Rare. She tells me, in a very dangerous thing in a society where they're stratified by color. Right? And she said to me one time, how does a blue-black man, because usually the Brahmin, are so fair, they look like they are white. And so she's like, how does a dark-skinned, blue-black man get to be Brahm? I said, well, I don't know. That's an interesting thing, because you would have to explain to me how in your society that is able to occur, right? Because in our society, we are also stratified by color, right? And we recognize that if you it don't matter. You could be that's what O.J. Simpson got a lesson in. It didn't matter how much money he had at some point. If he went against the rules and decided to behave as if he was not African American, they would put him in his place, which they attempted to do, regardless of his money. Doesn't matter. So what I'm saying is that the stratifications of color did not exist historically the way that they exist here in America for us prior to this. Really, African Americans here are a mixture of everything. And the survival techniques, they even created survival techniques based on all of these different layers of color in order to have them be more successful and be more able to be socially mobile and economically mobile here in America. I mean, that's where you get the quadroons and the octoroons and the, what are they called? Why are you laughing? The musty
No, I'm not laughing at you. I'm just laughing at you trying to pronounce the words. That's all. I'm not laughing at you.
No, I mean, if you know how to pronounce them better than me, let me know. But
that's
what I thought they were. Okay. Now here's the lesson. I looked this up. I said, this is some craziness right here. Biracial. I just put it like that because they used to be called mulatto. All of these words are considered archaic at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the mulattoes were half African and half white. The quadroons were one-fourth African and three-fourths white. Octoroons were one-eighth African American and the other part white, right? Hectadecaroon 1/16 African-American. Cicatra, 7/8 African-American. Musty was a white person. Musty, can you imagine that? Musty is a white person who is at least 1/8 African-American. So here is all of these societies built on creating African-Americans that are as close to white as they possibly can be, but can never pass over into whiteness unless they totally cut off their identity and no longer associate with their families. So when I looked at this, there was this conversation. I saw this thing where it talked about how in like 1962, there was something called the Right of the Womb that was a law enacted in Virginia that made slavery hereditary based on your mother's enslavement. So, for instance, if your mom was a slave and you were born to her, then you were a slave.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to that, they didn't have anything like that. English common law didn't allow it because the children's status was assigned to the father. So if you had been a slave and your father was white, then you could move from being a slave into whiteness based on the fact that your father was a white free man, right? And so I thought that was very interesting, that then now you have all of these, the increase in slavery is now based on, you can never, like, bridge over, you can never move over. You know how many black women were raped by their white captives. Those children automatically became slaves and owned and could be sold and what have you. So then you have these people who are trying to, for instance, in New Orleans, create these societies or these situations where white men will take care of these black children or mistresses. They would never be married to them because they had black blood, but they were bred to have as little black blood as possible so that they could have a lifestyle that would be comfortable for them. And so I say that, yes, we're perpetuating these notions of colorism, but we did not necessarily start it. We used it as a survival technique that unfortunately has began to turn against us and is still used against us to this day.
Okay. All right. Here you go. What about the concept of the white race getting ready to be erased because there's so much mix? And there's also some concept that this, passing these birth control laws, you know, that, you know, people can't have abortions and all of this. There's a concept out there that the reason why they want women to stop having abortions ain't for black people. It's not for people of color. They tired of those white women not having babies, because if the white women don't have babies, that means the white race is getting, mm-hmm. I mean, these are things that's floating around all over the place. You know, so for someone to be able to infiltrate into or cross over into that, you know, I mean, you know, you see these movies, they cross over, they listen, and they bring it back home because they
well, that's rare. That's rare. Usually, when they cross over, they go. Now, I've known a whole bunch of people. Yeah, they don't look back. They can't afford to be associated with black people. They have to totally cut off that aspect of themselves. And that's why I said it's another form of annihilation. in order to cross over. You said what?
I said, then that's okay for them. You know, that's what they want to do. That's what they want to do. I mean, you know, I guess I'm just a bit too sovereign. You know, I don't have these problems with judging people for the shit that they do, pardon my expression. It's like, if that's where you feel comfortable and that's what you want to do and that's where you want to lose yourself, well, by all means, go ahead. You know,
well,
you're not necessarily.
Look, I don't care about people who necessarily cross over or what have you, but what I care about is the destruction that the colorism notions does within our community. And so the havoc that it wreaks in our communities, the disunity that it grows in our community. That's what I'm concerned about. Because I've been watching it more and more and more. I've been watching, you know, black, dark-skinned hued women say, you know, light-skinned women don't care about us. We're not valued. They treat us like crap. And I'm like, this is interesting because in my lifetime, in my experience, it has been the darker hued women who have been the people who have perpetrated things on me. I did not perpetrate things on them. Right. And that is because I believe that they had not rectified or did the personal work or whatever it is that they needed to do in order to see clearly when and where those things are entering into their world. But it's kind of hard. It's kind of hard to be able to separate those things out. And I know that as a black person entering into a new job, where the tradition is to haze, okay, the new guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
The culture is to haze the new guy. You don't know if you're being hazed because you're black, and you don't know if you're being hazed if you're the new guy, right? More than likely, you're being hazed because you're the new guy, but they're giving you an extra zolt of it because you're also black, right? So it's like, wait a minute here, where do we draw the line? And so as I began to come into contact with these things, as I began to be exposed to these things more and more and more, I recognized that the sovereignty of who we are as a people is jeopardized by us not recognizing that we are all black. Okay, that's the paradox. By us standing in that paradox, living in that paradox, and moving in that paradox. I often tell my partner that I'm waiting for her to reconcile her light-skinnedness so that she can run into these areas where they think she is straight-up white, grab everything off their table, and bring it back to the black community.
It's time for us to ask our callers if anyone out there has any input, would like to ask a question, would like to give their opinion. I can open up the lines the last 15 minutes of the show. All you have to do, I believe, is press 1. Then I see a little exclamation point go up, and then I open up your line. So with that said, we don't have to stop talking, Isabayo, because I have biracial grandchildren, and I've watched mm-hmm. them grow into who they desire to become, and it's okay with mm-hmm. me, whoever they decide they want to be. Now, my oldest biracial grandchild, for the longest time, and I'd say for the last past 2 years, because her mother is Caucasian, she wanted to have her hair, she called it the silk press. So she would go to the mm-hmm. salon, and I would get my locks done, and she would get her hair washed, and then she would have it pressed out, you know, and get a little flip at the end. And she loved it, okay? So, but her youngest sister, who is like 6 years younger than her, wanted her older sister's natural hair,
uh-huh.
okay? And then I've watched the older one move into her naturalness. Okay?
Right.
Her hair is naturally curly. She likes to put the braids across the top, you know, and have her natural hair. So she's not into that silk press stuff anymore, all on her own. You know, now if she wanted to silk press the rest of her life, that would have been her business. You know, she knew she was black. She just wanted her hair straightened. She can't not know she's black. Her father's black. You know, he's got joint custody. You know, and then I have another one in California. Her mother's Armenian, so her mother automatically got that Jewish type kinky hair. You know, all my son and her needed to know, my son needed to know was how to comb it while she was a baby so she would get used to having it combed. And I went out there, I think she was 2 years old, and little girl sat on my lap just as nice, and she wanted cornrows in her hair, and that's what I did for a two-year-old. You know, so I feel like nowadays we don't have no problems. I mean, maybe some people do. Granted, some people do. But I think we're sovereign enough to know who we are, that we don't want to judge who you are, and you have a right to be who you want to be as long as who you are doesn't hurt me. You know, because there's so many different types of us out here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I do need to know from you, because you stated it quite nicely, and you said, you know, we need to begin to understand whether or not people of color are participating in their own annihilation.
Mm-hmm.
And me, you know, my opinion is no. They're participating in not only assimilation, but what they're doing is infiltration. Okay?
I wish it was infiltration. I have an experience with this infiltration.
Huh?
I said, I wish it was infiltration. I have seen it be infiltration.
Yeah, well, then I'm going to suggest that you stop encouraging me to come to the farm and you come off the farm. All right?
I have come off the farm. Look, I am in the throes of watching children who have the opportunity to design their own sculpture park that reflects them, drawing images of white children. Why have we not moved that needle since the 1960s? Why is there not a reflection of themselves in this park? I could have understood if they even drew Black Panther. That would have, you know, at least there's a reflection of Black culture there. Why are all of the things that they draw with, you know, straight hair and, you know, that mimic a culture that does not even recognize who they are? They are absent in their own story, as my partner says. So what is going on where we still are creating children that are absent in their own story? And this park is supposed to be designed, this is just an example, to live beyond them. But what happens when the images that they place in this park they have not even inserted themselves in something that is supposed to live way beyond them, so that anybody that comes and looks and is of them and is an extension of them can even see us there. We have become invisible. And that's why I say it is a participation in our own annihilation, because we don't even understand how to insert ourselves into our own story anymore.
Well,
that
is just, to me, that's a matter of personal opinion.
I'm living it. I'm watching it. That's what I'm saying. I'm watching it.
Well,
so
you know,
it's not for me. It's not personal opinion. It's like an actual fact because I'm seeing this happen.
You're watching it from one side of the coin, and I may very well be watching it from another.
Exactly.
That does not make you wrong. You know,
you see
a six, and I see a nine. You see?
Right.
So
yeah,
that does not make you wrong. You know, so what are you going to do about what you're seeing?
Well,
you got 5 minutes
to
tell me because you got 5 minutes to tell me because the show will be over.
We're challenging the children to look around and insert in the story that which they see.
How many children are you around, Arima, for you to insert?
Oh my God. The Arts Center probably deals with 60 to 100 children a year, all right? And that's been since the 50-year inception of the Arts Center. So we've had lots of African-American and of color, people of color, and some non-African-American children be influenced by the work that we do at the center, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You are where you need to be, and I guess I'm where I need to be. And right now in this day and age, I believe that people are where they need to be. There's no mistaking.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why the challenges have to come. You know what I mean?
So,
challenge us to be ourselves and then live in the integrity of who we are. That's what I mean.
Okay.
You're funny. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, you think so?
Mm-hmm, I know
you
so. Oh, my
so.
Goodness.
I think. I'll call you after the show is over.
Okay.
So you can tell me how funny I was.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
I guess we don't have anyone. You want to, you got a couple of more minutes, sweetie. Because the show without me doing anything.
It'll just cut off. Oh, wow, that's interesting.
Will,
well, the reason why I said it must be in the stars is that I have been down. I was diagnosed with a pinched nerve.
Mm-hmm.
In my back. So I was not at work for this past week. Right? And so I have been cutting garlic. I was blessed with being able to pick. I must have, like, did something with my back when I was picking garlic. But I picked about 30 pounds of garlic. Okay?
Yeah.
And the guy gave me, he said I could pick as much as I wanted to for $30. So I picked as much as I wanted to for $30, and then after that paid for it later because, you know, I picked it, and then I had to go haul it to the truck and then haul it off of the truck and process it. You know, it's got to be clipped so it can dry and do all that other fantastical stuff it needs to do. But, so somehow I pinched a nerve, maybe driving to Chicago to do the spirit work I was doing and everything and coming back. But I was off. So I was like, yeah, I know how you can only sleep in a certain position.
Yeah.
And you got to hold your body a certain way so you can not have pain and all this other kind of craziness. So, yeah. And I said, it must be in the stars.
Must be.
Mm-hmm.
Well, family, I'm going to give you today's thought. I want to thank Ifabio for being here with us, and hopefully she'll return because I gave her a hard way to go today. She may not want to come back. But this thought for the day is from the book A Woman's Spirit. A Woman's Spirit. Life is so much easier if you ride the horse in the direction it's going.
Well,
horse is anonymous. There is a pattern to our lives. Our higher power has always wanted the best for us. Had we trusted the natural flow of our experiences instead of trying to control people and outcomes, we'd have experienced less pain and lots more joy. It's not that life won't have difficult lessons to teach us on occasion. It will, and they will hurt. But we must remember that our Creator will never give us what we can't handle, and furthermore, that we'll have the guidance we need to meet our challenges. Mm-hmm. Going against our inner urges never gives us peace. The wisdom that resides within is a gift from our higher power. Let's never forget that. And the thought for the day is, I will be peaceful today if I follow the voice of my heart.
Sure.
So, there you go. Life's wonderful. I feel good. I'm in a big mess over here, and I still feel good, you know?
Mm.
So that said, I want to say goodnight to everyone. And I'm sorry no one wanted to give us some interaction, some feedback. Until next time. Everybody be good. Let me see. Next time will be... Ooh. Next time will be the 1st of August. Stay
wow.
blessed, everyone. Love you, Fabio.
I love you, too. I love
okay,
you, too.
Double.
Oh, double.
Mm-hmm.